Non-Local, Part 1.1, A Few Notes Concerning Alaskan Death Metal. There are a few characteristics that make the subgenre of Alaskan death metal such a fascinating cultural phenomenon. 1. Almost every lead singer is female, and they almost all incorporate the death growl. 2. Of the 20 or so active Alaskan death metal bands, 16 of them sing in the bulk of their songs in an indigenous native Alaskan language, the most popular being Yupik, Tlingit, Denaina, and Inupiaq. The Dumpster Ravens lead singer, Holly Bell Capoon, grew up in Kotzebue, speaking Inupiaq. She sings mostly in her native tongue, but will also sing in Tsimshian or Haida. She particularly likes singing in Haida because it doesn't sound like any other language and produces a truly unique effect when done with the proper death growl. She does not speak Haida or Tsimshian fluently, just incorporates some of the words and phrases, stories and structures that she picked up from being around others. A lot of kids are doing it. 3. The mega-diverse death metal culture in the urban areas, Anchorage, Balto, Mattsu, Kenai, North Star, etc., has taken a keen interest in obscure artistic practices from around the world and from many different time periods, which they fuse together with their contemporary Alaskan identities, creating some wonderfully unique forms. Most of the obscure artistic practices the youth are interested in incorporate some aspect of an anti-aesthetic. Noises, irrationality, found things, nonsense, and a healthy obsession with the undead. One of the bands, Battle for Everything, combines elements of the 20th century revolutionary group Situationist International with traditional Anungan war armor. They occupied an uninhabited island near Unalaska as a social protest and broadcast themselves playing around a campfire in full regalia. They create band personas based on a fusion of legendary figures from Northwestern storytelling traditions and revolutionary figures from the past. Their lead singer goes by Sedna Goldman, half-mother of the sea mammals and half-Emma Goldman, anarchist. Other members include Tetuchku Vera, Blackskin X, Kushtaka Prudon, Salmon Boy the Uprising, and Bear Mother Jones. The band's Kanikinik is fronted by a Hmong woman named Sulur, whose stage name is Bim Bom Bam. To pronounce her name correctly, you have to say it very fast, almost missing some of the consonants. They blend radical politics from around the world, folktales of cultures dispossessed from their traditional homelands, and a special hybrid of street noise, hip-hop, and shoegaze grindcore. Their latest album, Resistance Feet, is highly regarded for its innovative combination of yodeling and the recreated stories of the Hmong crossing the Mekong to Alaska. 4. They are not using the term death metal out of context or disingenuously. They are sincerely interested in the sound structure and the expressive potential of death metal's atonality, rapid key changes, rhythm, tremolo, and tempo. The singers are using vocalizations to get at deep, subconscious, untapped forms of humanity. Some of the first singers in the subgenre were activists, artistically tackling serious women's issues in Alaska, which at the time had one of the highest rates of sexual abuse in the United States. The sound itself evolved out of a case of artistic empowerment for the community, adding a uniquely female tone to a musical genre that had almost exclusively been a male-dominated sound from its inception. The local flooding of the field by female vocalists has also fostered an inclusive nature taken from so many other cultures and formats. Many of the bands get accused of cultural appropriation by special interest groups who are not seeing the simple genius of the music. Most bands respond to accusations and cultural appropriation with the sharpest of all conjunctions. And it can't go unsaid that they are also really into loud, distortion-laden heavy metal because it just plain rules. The reason they are using such an old structure of music making, and we are talking about classical death metal here, is they see it as one of the more authentic, pan-Arctic or sub-Arctic art forms, with its expressive subgenres all over Greenland, Lapland, Iceland, Siberia, even Canada. Even if it is from many, many generations ago, before the internet even. 5. They treat the death growl like a classical singing style synonymous with operatic singing, but mostly they see it as an extension of the traditional Inuit throat singing technique, which is sometimes called Inuk throat singing, or locally, the Tikatnu growl, even though Inuk throat singing is not an Athabascan cultural tradition. Inuit throat singing is called many different things regionally, but it probably originated in modern-day Nunavut. It is a highly creative and improvisational musical style of singing that can be both voiced and unvoiced. incorporating sounds from a myriad of sources, and it is performed by women. It can be a competitive duet or a singing game, seeing who can outlast the other in a will to sing. Sometimes the women hold arms and dance as they are competitively sing in patterns and tones, imitating, then outdoing each other. Sometimes they will make animal nature noises, or explore large emotional tones and forms in the continuous stream of vocal sounds. In some places, the women would sing so close to each other's faces that they would be using the other's lips and mouth cavities as vocal resonators, amplifying and modulating their songs. One of the origin stories is that the Inuit throat singing came about as a game that women would play while the men were out whaling. There's no real consensus on that, but it's definitely a female vocal form. Sometimes it comes across like a fun singing game. Sometimes it has a very sexual feel to the performances or vocalizations. Sometimes, when it is performed by a vocalist singing alone, it can be emotionally dynamic and full of speech patterns or the sounds of people trying to communicate with each other. In civilized Alaskan death metal circles, Inuk throat singing is regarded as one of the most original and important art forms ever created by the denizens of the North. Alaskan death metal bands will often feature two female lead singers, and it's not uncommon for lead singers to break into minutes-long throat singing breakdowns. They've yet to term the solo styling of the death growling throat singer subform inside of Alaskan death metal breakdown. The singing style is called the Takatnu growl, Takatnu being the Dena'ina word for cook inlet. Some refer to it as death whispers or curdling. Some people give it the term yackling and treat it like an internet meme with rigid, ludicrous structures. The lead singers Tisha Prevechka and Celine Sekpiak of the band Panderworld will break into a beatboxing, throat-singing competitive duet several times during a set. There are a couple of bands that have incorporated the use of European classical instrumentation as well. Nip Sarcophagus of the band Extra Lives of the Epic Mute plays the contrabassoon on most tracks. Nip Sarcophagus is a second-generation Alaskan whose parents came from South Sudan during the Civil War of the early 21st century. Extra Lives of the Epic Mute moved to Portland and then to Seattle trying to get a record deal. They're one of the more successful Alaskan death metal bands. Some say it's because they're one of the few that has a white male for a lead singer. They still travel back to Anchorage every summer and record tracks with local bands. They are one of seven Alaskan death metal bands to have toured Europe. 6. One of the most prevalent lyrical topics are the reconstructed or deconstructed stories from the Circumpolar North. They are especially fond of the scary stories. Some of Holly Bell Coopin's favorite stories are the Haida tales of boogeyman with coal for hands, the people who turn into walruses at night, or ghost stories associated with the hairy man or the Kashtakas. 7. The silkscreen images of logos for Alaskan death metal bands has become part and parcel with the city. They are everywhere, and it would be freaking the old folks and official harbingers of culture out more if their approach were not so historically adept. It is hard to be angry with a punk kid for having beaded eyebrow rings and a gross image on their t-shirt if they are referencing Kristeva and Baba while discussing the finer points of the traditional Tatooch Thunderbird tale. When realizing this, some old folks have simply held their hands aloft in the devil horns, wishing the children of Anchorage peaceful journeys and much festive rocking, to which most of the kids would, of course, gag. The locus of Alaskan death metal is one of the oldest neighborhoods in Anchorage, Spinard. For many years, after its founding, the lumberman, Joe Spinard, had been a bustling town in its own right, especially when Anchorage was just a squalid little tent city on Ship Creek. It's a wonder that the city, when it finally amalgamated, chose the name Anchorage over Spinard. Spinard has always had the reputation of being a bohemian district, where artists, criminals, and musicians live. It was one of the original red light districts in the bowl. And if you started or wanted to start a death metal band in Anchorage, you're going to live in a shitty little trailer or backyard apartment in Spinard. If you wanted to make a ton of money and pick up a record deal, your band would have to relocate to Seattle or Portland. But for all intents and purposes, Alaskan death metal is Spinard. Now, there are a few clubs in Spinard that host death metal wakes, as they are called. The Spinard Recreational Death Metal Center, housed in an old abandoned strip club. The Back Pain Specialists, they kept the previous name and sign of the business that went under at the building they bought, and Potlatch Projects, where the price of entry is simply a homemade dish to share. There is also one in Ship Creek called Quonset 90, one of the old Quonset huts down on the river. It is for the well-to-do metalhead and features a smoothie bar with unhealthy-sounding beverage names like Unbridled Ogre Breath, featuring fresh garlic and kale, or Blood Ground Conspiracy with beets and grape puree. Blood Ground Conspiracy will become the name of an album by the Dumpster Ravens in 3 years' time, after the beverage gains the mysterious aura of an urban legend involving a mining supply company, human organ trafficking, and police complicity in the home death of a state official. The Alaskan death metal kids can usually be seen about town in big pants and have an excessive assortment of buckles, straps, and zippers. They also wear stylish and tasteful cuspix in the traditional manner, with floral patterns and solid trim. Holly Bell Capoon is known to wear very beautiful cuspix on stage. A picture of her wearing one her mother gave her as a birthday present at the Girdwood Forest Fair last year made the cover of the international rock publication Witching Hours during a special issue on Alaskan death metal. The lead guitarist of the Dumpster Ravens had popularized the birch bark hats from the Inside Passage in the Anchorage scene just before the article came out. Dumpster Ravens fans have been dutifully wearing the style ever since. Many kids will also wear the Sacpiac bentwood hats and incorporate Denina-style beadwork into their leather jackets. Usually elaborate and intricate floral patterns with dangling beads and brightly colored porcupine quills. Some of the young ladies into the death metal scene will spend months beading the perfect winter outerwear with the frolicking, ornate beadwork that moves in plastic waves around their bodies. Some of the kids have taken to integrating ubiquitous computing into the beadwork, using smart beads that could levitate or magnetize or record data or house LED displays. Those little Huckleberry Pie computers are everywhere, anyways. The traditional beaded look on a leather jacket, with the old-school cut-out punk t-shirt design safety pinned to it, is the most popular by far. One would have to go to a wake in Spinard to catch a glimpse of a kid in a skull-print cuspic wearing a birch bark hat with an integrated open-source sound system, or hardcore gutter punk wearing smart snow goggles at night. The middle kids wearing clothes with beautiful Denina-style forget-me-not patterns, that can be seen in any convenience store or mall across Anchorage. They are the face of the scene, and the rest of the city, but the subgenre of the tech-savvy kids is starting to peek through. Sunshine Mosquito desperately wants to start an Alaskan death metal band. He wants to play guitar, and he has been teaching himself to play the fast tremolo picking technique that makes death metal crunch so magically, up and down the way it does. He's getting faster and stronger in his tremolo licks. He's also been trying to convince his childhood friend, Nesnen Benali, who goes by Nasne, to be the lead singer, seeing as how she is into Alaskan death metal every bit as much as he is. And she is also the only one of his friends who will go out to the one place in town that lets underage kids go into the shows, Potlatch Projects. She will even sport Sunshine the Casserole to get them into the club. She secretly wants to start a band as well, but is a little nervous. She's already written a few lyrics and has been designing costume and stage ideas. She really likes the classical hardcore band, Gwar, and their use of characters, and has mentioned this to Sunshine, who's not taken the bait yet. She's been listening to pagan metal bands out of Russia for the last two centuries, like Arkona and Misfit Reindeer Oblast. She's been studying the Inuit throat singing from standard bearers from northern music history, like Mammoth Whisperers and Tanya Tagak. Sunshine and Nasne will eventually form a starter band and play while living in an extremely small apartment on 34th and Spinard. While everyone finishes college, the band will last all of 1 week, and they will never pick a cool-sounding band name. Sunshine will move into archaeological design and spend several years of his life studying at University of Washington in Seattle, where he accidentally ends up on an alien spacecraft of unknown origin, bound to a radiant heat source with a beautiful woman. Nasne will form one of the most successful Alaskan death metal bands to come out of the scene, Blood Moss. It'll be an all-girl band, and the first album will be called Happy Tundra Ween. She will always wish she had married Sunshine, and they'll remain friends their entire lives. Sunshine will be happy that his music career never panned out. He loves designing biodomes and housing kits for the outer groups.